hopefully you can understand my accent. And it's my first time in Ireland, and I'm really enjoying it. It's beautiful. We came because we wanted to see rain. We're coming to Australia. It's been sunny, so we've been a little disappointed. My book is called Immigrants, and it's about immigration of peoples and also fruits and vegetables. It began as a sonnet series about... I was really angry that I was writing sonnets because I wanted to be more avant-garde, but I decided to write sonnets about history, the history of fruits and vegetables, and decided that that really does correspond a lot with human migration and immigration. And coming from America, obviously, this is a topic that was dear to me. But the first of the poems, these are from all the places I've lived, and so this began in Venezuela, and then they move up and into Europe. So the first one is called Falling Fruit. They long to be devoured by a willful traveler who will rub them soft and let them fall. They can't wait to go. They bounce in the beds of cargo trucks. They crowd the sidewalks. They beat upon the parking lots and streets. In the market, they call out the name of their price. They can always be talked down. They don't care how many wrinkled bills you press into the hands of sweaty women. They don't count the coins nor admire the portraitures. Sometimes they tear the shopping bags and dive into the street. Even the established walnut tree at the Catholic school in Germany moans all night. We rip the seeds apart in the morning. Our fingernails are yellow. Our tongues are bitter brown. At this point, Beatrice pops out of the bathroom window. Her hair is loosened, her shoulders are bare, and her face is wet. She is smiling shyly. Like this, she is the flesh a mouth would want to hold. She offers to open the door for me, a foreigner who has no key. She must have heard the wooden door. I hadn't called out. Her feet are printing their wet leaves across the floor. Another rain poem, the ninth floor in Caracas. In the streets below Draguisa's body, rain bobbles the yellowish brown light. Her body's wet and slick as a street and brown between the window flaps. It's raining and the pipes groan, porque. She turns off the faucet, reaches for the soap. Suds leave her hands and slide the way stolen bulbs of light slide on electrical lines diverted through the mountainside bayous where it also rains. Puddling the floor, the baby slapping water, and the hairline cracks of concrete like the lines around Dragica's mouth. I pay for my electricity, Franklin says, who lives there. It's raining on her bright breasts. It's raining on her belly and down her thighs. The people below are wet with stolen light. No umbrellas strew their color. It's too hard for that, but the dogs quiver under lumber. The buses splash the same sloppy syllable across each sidewalk. The metro opens its mouth. The balcony becomes a cup. The faucet won't turn off. The soap has fallen, and her body, slick, is shining. Draguisa shakes some water drops from her fingertips. She blurs in latent steam, is lost in surfeit. She sharpens and blurs again. She has fingerprints and large hands. She tastes slightly of metal and of sea, and she's always smaller in person than we remember. And more than we expect. This one is actually a sonnet, and it's the history of Brussels sprouts. This vegetable emerged from the primitive, non-heading Mediterranean kraut and wrapped its crinkly little leaves around its winsome, blooming face and left to live a classic Bildungsroman. Adjusting mien and flavor, traveling north and west, it came upon the gates of Brussels and took the name that welcomed it. Gentlemen and lean courtesans took into their mouths its tight green jackets, endlessly disrobing. Sheets of luminosity pressed close. And fleets dispatched to newer worlds carried wide and far its seed. Like any immigrant, it put down roots before it could repent. This one is plums. The yellow ones resemble only themselves, can be held in one fist, four at a time. But at night, one dreams a choir overflowing with yellow notes, descending but never quite reaching the exposed heads of petitioners below. The color falls so heavily on the red ones, it bruises. The purple are still hard. At least we'll know when they are ripe, what fragrance, what texture, what light. And does the time they carry inside them ripen the same? The trees have been hidden in a stark ditch. The road itself sinks and springs, carrying churches and swept doors. On one side, the barley is already cut. The other is still gold. The corkscrew road lifts the forest up, and perched on the very top, a town through which one woman pushes a baby carriage. At the Slovak border, what can't be fed gnaws at the bones. The forest offers temporary cures. Flowers for bronchitis, lirizna for fever and flu, chamomile for sleeping, and water running under the roofs. The partisans who lived there, the German baths and skeletons, all of it belonged to us. We drank, and it satisfied for a while. But in my dream, I am moving like a tongue through the mouths of the speechless. I'm biting through buckets of unripe plums, one by one, ruining each of them because I can't tell time. This one is making sense of the senses. I studied philosophy for a while, and my philosophy teachers weren't so thrilled with me, so I just had to move on to something else. I thought I knew what I was talking about, but they didn't. So, a little bit of Marxism. Filled with lust, a woman goes shopping. Her desire deepens and wanders far beyond the capacities of local industries. Frivolous pair of shoes, French manicure, jumper cable, butter. She's trying to make sense of the senses. There on the roof of that tropical hut, on a beach of panting fish, the gills open. You see red suns and white cathedral bones and organs piping air. You can measure the distance of musical scores. Stick your fingers in and lift it up. The suns flee to other shores. The tail feebly wags. Too often, too vividly described to be imagined much, everywhere and all at once. Should have told you this is the Wagnerian opera, the quote, Dein Aschenata, Zulamit, and all that. And when you're not so fortunate, it happens just to you. Limpid eyes and waiting feet. For 3 hours, we have been saying index finger down a spine and button, button, saying nothing. Under the eaves, the wind is trembling. Under the leaves, the bench back vibrates with a voice. It's nothing personal, just a carved out sound. A flash of panic as the waves squeeze the air. Bravado. A tremble of pain. rage is an unlettered word. The Spartan chorus before rain. Rain is an unlettered word. Rage is a measuring spoon, spilling over and over again. Sehr geehrte Damen und Herren, when I find my way off this map, it won't be me paying your taxes and wearing your imported Italian shoes. Mit freundlichen Grüßen. Lust is a pocket knife too small for the task at hand. Lust is an unlettered word. Rain is a measure of character. And who can tell her what the peasants ate and what their surnames are, and if they sleep with the windows open, and what they hear through the crane shook shades, and what smells from their garbage pails, and if it tasted good. A love song to cabbage. I just like you, cabbage. Your tight-fisted order, yielding to my little knives with your immaculate squeaks. Your rotund indifference to all that falls away. The fact that you feed me through the winter, through the centuries, as I dislike my need. The shadows of your lifting fingers cast by your green light. And all my old sorrow. I dislike your density, as if the world lacked space. Your pure white heart that open seals can't heat. The way you fall apart when cooked. You're such a poor loser, because it takes so very long to finish all of you. I can say without reservation, I hate all the casual ways you're so unseemly chaste. So haughty in your modesty, so moderately good. I was living in Washington, D.C. before I moved to Israel, and I was very pleased to find that right when I was leaving, this next poem won a competition, the Poetry in Motion competition, and it was all over the buses of Washington, D.C., and it made me happy because it's called Coffee, and it's like spilling coffee on the bus, right? It's about Zlín in the Czech Republic. This is near where my family comes from, my grandparents. And you have to imagine Turkish coffee. Well, we call it Turkish coffee, or they did. It's the grind from the bottom, right? So you flip it over and it tells your fortune. The grind cast their fortune through your teeth. If you aren't careful, if you smile, the neighbors will be able to tell everything about you. I'm working on the potato sonnet, but you know it's taking so long because there's so much history behind the potato, but here's the radish. In its wild state, it's utterly unknown. It may come from China or Japan, and may descend from Raphanistrum. In the days of the pharaohs, it was grown extensively in Egypt. How its name from the Saxon, rud, rudo, or reud, or from the Sanskrit, rudira, for blood. It was hid from Britain till Gerard would claim in 1597 four distinct varieties. From its cellophane, denuded of greeny tops, or peasant fingers, rude and cakey earth, we lift them to the sink, recalling how Egyptian women dyed their nipples scarlet in a braver night. Now we move to the United States, and we'll end it there. This is from New York. No fruits or vegetables, but it's about Garcia Lorca, the Spanish poet who spent a year in New York and wrote a book called Poet in New York. He was pretty scornful of Coney Island and all the waste paper that was floating around in the sea. I've been thinking about the death of Garcia Lorca, the Andalusian sun and the shadows caging skin. the inclination to give away what someone comes to take, and how the difference between the two is only a matter of time. There, the feet of mountains kick away the sea, but at Coney Island, it was all piss and vomiting. I've been thinking about all the little machines that make the world work. Half-life and shelf-life, closing time. Museums, newspapers, and warranties. Those things that stop time. And what makes it slow? The shimmer of a spider web and Isadora Duncan's scars. How Lorca fills the rift between one motion and the next with the unconjugated verb. He was terrible. He never conjugated his verbs in his poem. And how his premonitions were a bridge more real than what it connected. Some stand still and some blow up trains and some poison bread, and this is called disruption. And the most common form of suicide in Dawsonland today is the one that causes the most inconvenience to the greatest number of subway passengers. Even now, the train is backing away from a body. The difference between a rupture and a rapture. The way gunpowder is compressed and how it explodes. And to kiss well, you must know how to lead, so you can learn to enter an uncommon time. Not one, not another, but the unsettled land between. And how this is only one kind of answer. One kind of bridge. And so much depends upon the way the eyes shift, what a soldier remembers after the firing squad has scattered. You guys all know that García Lorca, of course, was killed by in the Spanish Civil War.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Keep going. Yeah. This one is just a couplet. And there's a reference to Witold Gombrowicz and Bruno Schulz. I don't know if you know these guys. Witold Gombrowicz was a Polish writer. He and Bruno Schulz are both Polish, and they were contemporaries. Gombrowicz is really fun to read, especially his diaries, because he's so narcissistic and it's really sweet. But he was on a cruise ship to South America when World War II broke out, and he stayed in Buenos Aires. Refused to learn Spanish for 25 years, and he said, if anybody wants to read my work, they have to learn Polish. Bruno Schulz was a contemporary, and he died during the Second World War. He was Jewish. And Gombrowicz at some point said about Bruno Schulz that Bruno Schulz was a slave to art, but art was a slave to Witold Gombrowicz. So there's a small reference. Called Field Guide to Silence. He was dusting her silence, her fingerprints. She was taking him out of context. If words carry with them the traces they have been, so be it. He was tracing around in his Armani verbs, his Cuban heels demeanor. She was always confusing personification with personality. Sometimes she thinks Witold Gombrowicz was right about Bruno Schulz. Too nearing each other, they turned around, dumb with yearning. If he likes metaphors so much, let him make a home in them and be comfortable. In Peru, there are symbols for everything. There is a theater of clouds. There are actors on the mountains. She bit the hand that feeds her to see how it would taste. This one is called Immigration Quotas. It's a prose poem, so it's written in one big block. All my life I have been meeting foreigners with green cards. They ride bicycles. They cook delicious. They buy tickets to the opera. They pronounce my name as burning vowels. They direct my steps with eloquent turns of wrist. But though they have gardens and have set my bones, and I have met their great aunts and seen their sofas and smelled their skin,
they will leave me motionless after sunset. The credits, picking raspberries, the Van Gogh. Before half-closed eyes of Russian icons and gold leaf glittering under buzzing lights and temperature. The visa will expire. Too loud to resist, the band will hit the wrong note. The bank will fail. The hand will drop off the shoulder. It will have been vacation, high tide, an accident, a mispronunciation, an unfortunate choice, an ill-advised use of slang. And I'll end this with on a little sad note, but this is an elegy for Arturo Fuente. I was born in Texas, and my town was trilingual. It was Spanish, Czech, and English speaking. And there were many illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants coming in from South America, Central America mainly, depending on what was going on at the time. And there was a sweet family, the Puente family. There were five daughters and a son. And this is an elegy for the son, Arturo. The brother wants to drop out of fifth grade now that Arturo is gone. He's remembering the fisherman speared by a marlin, leaping across the boat's stern, and he wants a manly job. But Aurelia, his eldest, says no, tells him, just thinking is dangerous sometimes, too. Like that Greek guy we read about in school. An eagle drops a tortoise on his bald head, which from a distance looked exactly like a stone. Arturo's death was simple, almost as if nothing happened at all. The car fell from its jack in Peterson's garage. A sentence so lucid, you can't take it any other way. There must have been a sharp boom, the clatter of a jack striking the cement, and much quieter, the socket wrench dropping from Arturo's hand. After the funeral, the clods of earth scatter, arch, and fall unseen on the casket below. If his mother, his five sisters, balanced on thin, fuzzy legs, had any sort of premonition the night before he died, they didn't say. My friend Isela always dreams the soon-to-be deceased is pulling flowers from a garden. The mourners bite into their German chocolate cake, clutching white paper plates. The ivy pulls like fingers on the cemetery fence. What will they do now, we say? The syllables of Arturo Fuente's name, etched into the breath of the town, slowly begin to fill with other conversation. The elements begin to lap the letters of the headstones, so they are drifting with dust over the garages of minimum wage, with pollen over fruit trees and grain, across the Texas coast, over the grazing cows to the west, over the border. The sisters marry, perhaps a little sooner than they would have otherwise. More men part the ribs of the fence and squeeze through. No one believes in victim of circumstance. Sometimes the rushing coastal wind stills suddenly, as if the earth had stumbled.